I met Archivigraha Prabhu in Bombay in the late 70s. I was the head pujari of Prabhu. And can you hear me okay? She was visiting, and I don't know how exactly we met, but I think she might have heard of me and made it a point to meet me, and we had some nice conversations and discussions. She was an artist, very respected and well-known artist in South Africa and internationally as well. And my nature is also creative, artistic. So she appreciated the deity worship. She appreciated my nature. And just, we had a nice connection. So after she returned to South Africa, we would stay in touch. Sometimes she would write me, I would write her. So we just had a mutual respect for each other and appreciation. And we would just correspond periodically. Of course, this is before the email and all this. It's very slow letters back and forth. She was a very, very talented artist. She worked in many different mediums. She drew this picture of Srila Prabhupada in charcoal. If you have the time to really study it, it's very sensitively done. You see the chatter, Prabhupada's chatter, Harinam chatter. All the shading is done by the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Very fine. So, executing, but also in the mind, being inspired, how to present something in a tasteful way. Just like when I walked into the room tonight, and I immediately got the kushbu of the flowers. Such a nice aroma. So the original artist is Krishna. Nobody can be a greater artist than Krishna. He has created this. Is this Mogra? What a beautiful smell. Scientists can maybe try to duplicate the smell with chemicals, but who's the person that in his own mind can invent the smell? So, we are all reflections of the Supreme. We may have some intelligence, we may have some beauty, we may have some quality, but the full quality is first proposed on the Lord. At some point in South Africa, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And that was a huge shock to her. But she had been advancing in her Krishna consciousness, and she thought, what is the use to promote myself as an artist, to work in this world, to remain in South Africa? Better I go to Vrindavan and get a piece of land, build a house, have a studio, and do my bhajan, do my worship, do my art in Vrindavan. So she made those arrangements. She came to Vrindavan, she purchased a property, and then over time she saw to the construction. Of course, she was mostly in South Africa, she couldn't come that often. So sometimes she would ask me, oh, could you help? You know, sometimes her money wasn't there in time, and she would just help, ask me to assist in whatever way, and I would always do whatever I could. So eventually, of course, the house was completed. She moved into the house. The ground floor was where she lived and where her studio was. And the floor above was for her, Guru Maharaj. And I would often go to Vrindavan. I would go at least twice a year. I would go to the festivals. And, of course, when I would arrive in Vrindavan, I would go see my dear friend. And we would have nice discussions about what's new and how she's doing and how's her health. And So we would have very practical discussions and also Christian discussions. I talked about this before, but, you know, so she was a very, well, she was a small lady. She was not very tall. She was very small. But she was very powerful. She was not, you know, you cannot take her lightly. And being an artist, she had her own vision, her own way of doing things and nature. So one time when she was in Delhi, she would go for her treatments and she would go see the doctor. So one time she was in Delhi, she saw this interesting chair that was basically black and white, kind of checkerboard, kind of mother of pearl, crazy chair, which would be the last thing you would expect to see in her job. But she just enjoyed that chair and she bought it, she put it in her house. I love that chair. Yeah, it's like, just like a checkerboard, old kind of chair, black and white, and kind of shiny. So in the beginning, her health was, of course, the prognosis was not good, but she could function, she could do her artwork, she could chant, she could do what she needed to do. But gradually over time, of course, the disease was taking a toll on her. And I've told this story before. One day, she called me in and she said, "Narottam, you know, really, I don't know who I could tell this to. Nobody would understand this. No normal devotee would understand this." But she told me, you know, my deepest attachment, because she was an artist. She would draw, she would sculpt, she just worked in very different mediums. But she had some very exclusive paper that was used for drawing, sketching. It was a very special paper. So she asked me, she said, "Really, I can't think of anyone to tell except for you. So, can you please make sure that this paper is kept carefully and that after I go, it would be given to someone that can appreciate it and use it in the proper way?" Of course, paper is not a big attachment, but because she was an artist and she cared tremendously about her tools, because her tools helped her express who she was and what she had to say as a soul in this world. So in that way, the paper was important to her. So of course I would travel back and forth from Bombay to Vrindavan, and you know, the disease was progressing. And she would also explain to me that I'm just an ordinary person, and I became attracted to Krishna. And now Krishna has put me in this position. She goes, "I was happy to be in South Africa, chant Hare Krishna, associate with the devotees, do my art." As a kind of a lifestyle, she had no issue with that. But then Krishna, he said, "Okay, so you're comfortable in this? Well, what about this?" And he turned up the, you know, and she, of course, she rose to the occasion and surrendered more, came to Vrindavan and engaged in her activities. But as the disease took more of a toll on her, of course, one can become bitter. "Why is this happening to me? Other people are healthy." You know, she was, like I said, she was a very small, petite lady. But she was also very powerful and very strong-willed. And she was used to doing everything for herself. She was not a, you know, just a humble little sitting in the corner shy person that you didn't notice. She was a fireball in her own way. So to be in a position where she couldn't even turn herself in the bed, let alone get up and get a glass of water for herself or cook for herself. You know, it was really a struggle to be that dependent on others when you're that strong of a personality and used to doing whatever you want whenever you want. So there's so many psychological deep surrenders that go on every minute of every day. Because at every moment we have a choice to surrender or to try to do it on our own. If we think, by my ability, I will get through this, that's the opposite of surrender. So, for somebody who's very strong-willed and has had a whole lifetime of doing things independently, it is not easy to take service from others. But of course, she had a number of ladies around her who were very dedicated to her, and Kunti was, you know, number one, Devi in charge, ready to do anything any time of the day for her. So it was complicated for her relationships with the other ladies. It was complicated for her own ego, because she had to gradually let go of the idea that she could do something independent. One day I went to her house. I told this story before, but one day I went to her house in the afternoon, and I knocked on the door. She came to the door and she was crying. So she said, "Oh, it's not a good time." I said, "No, it's the perfect time. Let me in." And then I thought to her, "What's going on? What, you know, what is the problem? What are you thinking about?" And then we just talked together. And later she made Maharaj, after she passed away, he gave me a little printout because she had written something in her diary about how I had come to the door and we talked and how I preached to her. I wasn't really preaching to her, we were just talking soul to soul. And again, my seva was in Bombay, so I would always come back to Bombay, and then I would go to Mayapur and then come to Vrindavan. So the last time I saw her in Vrindavan, she was very weak. And I would see her a number of times. And of course, by then, so many of the devotees, advanced devotees, sannyasis, and people that lived in that area, like Bibi Govinda Maharaj, Shivan Swami, and so many of the others, Nidunda Maharaj, people would come and they were around, they would give her association, read to her, chant with her. And she was becoming just totally surrendered to Krishna, with nothing else on her mind. So I asked her, Archivigraha Prabhu, do you remember that time when you asked me to take care of that special drawing paper that was, you know, so dear to your heart? And she goes, "Oh, it's okay. I'm not concerned about that paper." No, but it's interesting how Krishna works, because it's like anything. Prabhupada went to America. He had no money. He had no tools. He had no assistance. He had no vehicle. There's no reason why he should have succeeded in anything that he did. Materially, he had nothing. But spiritually, he had everything. Full faith in Krishna. Total surrender to his guru. And then, like magic, everything happens. It's like doors open, the Red Sea part. It's just like it's all childhood games for Krishna. He can do anything. So, we have no idea who is sitting next to us. We think, okay, somehow, by causeless mercy, I come to this Krishna consciousness. I'm not a very good devotee. My mind is wandering. But I'm doing some simple service the best I can. Sometimes I'm more successful, sometimes I'm less successful. But due to circumstances, due to the arrangement of Guru and Krishna, if we react, if we choose, if we surrender, if we pick Krishna, then attachments fall away. And we become advanced, even though we don't expect, even though we don't feel that we're advanced. If we follow, if we surrender to the will of the Lord, he's getting us. So she really became a totally surrendered person. Although she would say, "I just ordinarily We know she was not ordinary. And we think we're ordinary. But when we're put in the position that we can also choose, then we will also be extraordinary. This is, these stories, you know, they're not far away from us. They're actually very close to us. And we will all, each one of us will have our time in the sun. We will all be put in a position where we have to choose ourselves. And we can learn from these examples of the great souls that come before us and try to take inspiration and example from them and try to progress and fix our mind on the Lord and be absorbed in the chanting, be absorbed in the philosophy, and learn to accept service from Vaishnavas and render service to Vaishnavas. Thank you very much. All glories to God.